I'm here with Alexander Mercurs, editor-in-chief of The Deran. Alexander, let's talk about the impeachment hoax and the Senate trial. 51 to 49, they will not be calling any more witnesses, and it looks like we will have an acquittal, I believe they said, by Wednesday afternoon. And that should be that. I don't think it should surprise anyone, the outcome. It would have been nice to have seen witnesses like Hunter Biden and the person whose name we can't say, even though Rand Paul did try to get that through Roberts, to get that name said. But Hunter Biden and Simpson and all these guys, it would have been nice to have heard from them so that we can get to the bottom of Russiagate. But we'll leave that now to Barr and Durham. Anyway, Alexander, Wednesday, we should have the acquittal. What do you make of the whole process now that you have the full picture looking back on it?
I mean, it's something we discussed in our ebook, and I did a preface there in which I said a gigantic scandal about absolutely nothing. I mean, this has been one of the most extraordinary wastes of time there have ever been in American politics or in recent history. I mean, the US Congress has been tied up for weeks and months debating an issue which actually doesn't exist. And what I will say, the one perhaps good thing that's come out of this, or perhaps two things of good things have come out of this, is firstly, it's cast a sort of ghastly light on what has been going on in Ukraine and the kind of things that have been going on there with people like Hunter Biden. And there was a very powerful presentation by one of Donald Trump's lawyers, Pam Bondi, who actually went into the details of, you know, Hunter Biden's activities and set it out in, you know, great length. I don't think she said anything that we haven't already discussed at length in the Deran in our own videos, but it did make, I think, an impact with some of the senators who are perhaps not as fully versed in these discussions and these issues as we are. And I think the other thing that happened was a towering speech by Alan Dershowitz. Now, Alan Dershowitz is someone who I should say I have great political disagreements with. I mean, I don't agree with many of his views on political questions. I've never disputed his ability as a lawyer. And he did finally what ought to have been done a long time ago, which is as a top constitutional lawyer, he looked at the authorities, the actual decisions and discussions that took place at the time the Constitution was made and in the years and decades afterwards, and looked also at the legal arguments, the very high standard of legal arguments that took place in the first impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson in 1867. And he was able to make, I think, is an unanswerable claim, which I have made before, which is that a impeachment cannot happen on simply nebulous assertions of, you know, malpractice, or as it is called, abuse of power, whatever that means, and obstruction of Congress, whatever that means. There must be real positive actions that, you know, rise up, if not exactly to the level of a crime, to something analogous to it. I mean, some serious wrongdoing. And I think that many senators listening to all that on the Republican side, of course, none of the Democrats would have been, but most of the Republicans would have been, I think, very strongly convinced and swayed by that. And I think that it was that speech, more than any other, which basically demolished the theory that John Bolton had anything, you know, significant to add to what is already known and to the legal issues, which finally killed the whole idea of adding, you know, going for the witnesses that the Democrats wanted to call. So I think that those two very strong performances by Pam Bondi and Alan Dershowitz put a stop to the whole thing. I think hopefully, and perhaps what Dershowitz said will now become a part of the accepted precedent in future impeachment cases, and will mean that we will not get more of these frivolous impeachments for the moment. But I have to say, looking at the Democrats and the kind of mess they're in, and their obsession with going after Donald Trump on these minimal issues, I mean, these trivial, absurd issues, and, you know, the witch hunt, I don't think witch hunt is too strong a word, that they've been waging against him. One can't be sure about that. And I was watching Devin Nunes on Tucker Carlson's program, and he said that he thought that they probably would go on with these kind of, you know, absurd investigations. If they do, then all I can say is they're doing everything they can to help Donald Trump win the election. And we will probably see Donald Trump not just win the election, but win it big. If the Democrats waste all their time between now and Election Day pursuing these absurd witch hunts.
Ted Cruz was on Hannity, and he gave an interview, Alexander. And I think it was the first interview that I've seen where he explicitly says that the Obama White House surveilled Trump. I mean, he says it, I'm paraphrasing, but I'm almost positive he said something along the lines, the Obama White House or Barack Obama was surveilling then candidate Trump.
Yes, a far more serious matter than what Trump's been accused of, which isn't serious at all. I mean, it's not even real. Carry on.
Yeah. He also has the number one podcast, by the way. He was moonlighting after the hearings. And he's going to a studio and he's doing podcasts. And the first podcast he ever did became the number one podcast. And that just shows the level of interest that people have in perhaps seeing Hunter Biden and the Obama White House and all these characters involved in Ukraine and in this hoax. You know, people want to see them investigated and they want to see justice. But do you think that now attention should turn towards the Obama White House, number one, and number two, do you think that Pelosi should step down as Speaker of the House? Because she is, I know she's not, and I know it's, you know, far-fetched, but she has shown complete incompetence.
Yeah. Well
complete incompetence.
Absolutely. I mean, can I just say a few things about this? First of all, Ted Cruz is, again, someone I don't agree with on most political things. But I do, again, accept that he is an outstanding lawyer. I mean, he does understand legal questions. And, of course, he was Alan Dershowitz's pupil. So, I mean, you know, he has an absolute grasp of these issues, which I suspect most people don't. And I think he's, admission that the Obama administration was carrying out surveillance of Donald Trump and of his campaign is enormously important, and is going to be more important as the investigations, the Barr-Durham investigations, which, to be very clear, are the real investigations. All these other investigations we've been hearing about, Ukraine gate, Russia gate, all these are phony investigations. These are real investigations into actual malpractice. We will be hearing more of these things. And I am sure that Ted Cruz, who is a lawyer, as I said, of great ability, and chooses his words very carefully, when he makes comments like that about surveillance, he knows or has some idea of what is coming. So, you know, let's, you know, keep all that highlighted and understood. Now, of course, Pelosi should resign. I mean, this has been a total debacle. She authorized an impeachment brought by an alleged whistleblower who was not a whistleblower and not even a witness. She entrusted it to people like Nadler and Schiff, who were, as you could, I think you've described them properly in earlier videos, as two clowns who clearly didn't know what they were doing. They've wasted months of congressional time conducting an impeachment inquiry in the House of Representatives that broke all the principles of due process with, you know, Adam Schiff inventing a fabrication of the telephone conversation between Donald Trump and Zelensky and interviewing those witnesses he wanted to call in basements and rehearsing them there, and not allowing Republicans to call their witnesses. And then, as I said, cutting out any question of legal challenges through the courts to enforce subpoenas by taking this whole thing in a hurry to the Senate. The whole thing is an utter and complete mess. And Pelosi owns it. I mean, she was the person who was in charge. And it's now blown up in her face. And of course she should resign if, you know, things were done in the proper way in the United States, or at least in the Democratic Party. But we know she's not going to. We know that Adam Schiff is not going to. We know that Jerry Nadler is not going to. They're just going to go plugging on, doing the same thing all over again, and preparing the scene for the Democrats to lose big in November. That's all they're doing. Donald Trump's come out stronger from this thing.
Are they going to ever give up on the Russiagate, Ukraine gate angle? Or is this going to be the narrative for the next 4 years, given the fact that Trump will most likely win? Let's say he does win the re-election. Do you think we're just going to continue with the Russiagate, Ukraine gate angle? Or do you think they may actually have some creativity in their hoaxes left?
No, my
what they do is going to be a hoax, but maybe they get creative and think something else. Or do you think they're going to continue with this Russia angle?
Yeah, I don't think they've got any creativity in their hoaxes. I think that whatever credibility they had has gone. And I think Russiagate undermined it. And I think Ukrainegate has destroyed it. I mean, the country, the United States, the American people were never seized by this thing. I mean, they never took it seriously. As I said, Donald Trump's popularity actually grew over the course of the impeachment proceedings. So I don't think they can come up with anything more, but I expect that they're going to go on trying, because as is becoming increasingly obvious when you look at the Democratic Party, apart from an extreme and I suspect very unpopular view on identity politics, which I suspect most mainstream Americans don't support, the centrist Clintonite block which controls the Democratic Party has nothing of value to say. So unsurprisingly, it's people like Bernie Sanders are surging and Donald Trump is surging, and the Democrats, the centrist block of the Democrats, is going nowhere. So if they've got nothing to say, what else can they do but talk about these absurd conspiracies which don't exist except in their own imagination? The one thing I will say is that, of course, Barr and Durham are on the case. I expect their investigations will heat up. And of course, that may put the Democrats under an awful lot more pressure, especially when we start to see indictments, which I anticipate we will.
You think we're going to see indictments, huh?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I would be extremely surprised if we don't. I mean, I think all the signals that are coming out of the Justice Department and out of Barr and Durham say that there will be indictments. I mean, remember when Horowitz delivered his report, both Barr and Durham especially, came out and said that they didn't buy this theory that the FBI had probable cause to launch the Crossfire Hurricane Russiagate investigation. So I think we will almost certainly see indictments. I would be very surprised if we don't.
One thing that always puzzles me about Pelosi, Schiff, Nadler, all these idiots going down the route of Ukraine. I can understand the Russia thing, but the Ukraine thing, you had Biden mixed up in it. They all knew.
Yeah.
Biden was stealing money out of Ukraine. They all knew Hunter Biden was stealing money out of Ukraine. We all know about Pelosi's son, Mitt Romney's kid, McCain, Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
All these people that were involved in pillaging Ukraine, going back to the Obama years. And this all falls on Obama's shoulders because Ukraine was just one big, Ukraine was a business.
Yes.
That's all it was. It was a piece to a big money laundering puzzle, a very important piece to a money laundering puzzle. I just don't understand why they would have focused on Ukraine, Schiff, Nadler, Pelosi, knowing, like you said, that all this stuff about Biden, Hunter Biden, Pelosi's kid, I think Paul Pelosi's his name, I'm not sure, you know, Mitt Romney's kids, all these people, Graham, McCain, everyone that was involved in Ukraine would rise up. It doesn't make that. No. That's the part that I can't really, I can't square that part out. I can't figure that out, why they would focus on Ukraine. I would, and to just finish it off, Alexander, I would imagine that the fact they're not calling witnesses and not going to dig deeper to Ukraine, I could imagine that Hunter Biden is breathing easier. I could imagine Lindsey Graham is breathing easier. I could imagine the Pelosi family, the Romney family, all of them, all the people that were involved in stealing the tens of billions of dollars, U.S. taxpayer dollars, EU taxpayer dollars. I'm sure a lot of people in Brussels are breathing easier. Christine Lagarde, I'm sure, is breathing easier. I'm sure all of them are saying, thank God that this Ukraine thing may end. Dummy Schiff, you dummy Schiff, you dummy Pelosi, you dummy Nadler. Why did you guys bring up this Ukraine bank robbery that we had going on since the Obama years? Why did you guys decide to follow this route?
Well, indeed. I mean, I don't know is the answer, to be frank. But I suspect what is happening is there was a conflation of various things. I think that the Democratic Party establishment had been trying to build up Joe Biden, and they sensed that there was a ticking bomb underneath him. And I think they may have thought that by launching this impeachment, they were going to somehow defuse it. I think also they've been very concerned at the back of their minds about Barr and Durham. And they were trying to try and get an impeachment going to try and, see off Barr and Durham in some way. I think that they thought that, you know, if they could sort of queer the pitch for Barr and Durham in Ukraine, where a lot of Russiagate, I suspect, originates, that would help them there. But I think there is something else, which is that I think the Democrats now live in this bubble. I mean, they talk to each other all the time. They listen to what their media friends say. They listen to what people like Brennan and, you know, Comey and all these sort of people say. It's become an echo chamber. And I think that at some level, they really did believe that they would be able to do Donald Trump real damage through this impeachment. And if we go back to the origins of this impeachment, I think that if you remember what happened, we had this whistleblower making all these extraordinary allegations. I think that Pelosi probably didn't realize how that thin those allegations were. She then got the whole impeachment ball rolling. And then, of course, it all imploded in her face right at the first moment, when Donald Trump did what she never expected him to do, which was to declassify the report of his conversation with Zelensky. From that moment on, this impeachment was never going to go anywhere. I mean, that was his fundamental point where it all started to go wrong. And then, of course, they tried to create some confusion in the Senate by talking about witnesses, and they orchestrated this leak of Bolton's book, which I don't have any doubt, by the way, that was done, you know, through the usual wire pulling with the Vindman brothers. We discussed this in a recent video. I don't think there's any chance. There was just a chance that these sort of extracts from the book started to appear when they did. That was their last desperate throw. But what then happened was you had this towering performance from Dershowitz. You had this tremendous forensic discussion from Pam Bondi. And of course, they were left, up the creek and without a paddle, because, you know, ultimately they didn't have anything there. And it shows how dysfunctional the Democratic Party has become.
Yeah, but Alexander, so if you're Biden, you're Joe Biden, you're one of the most powerful people in the U.S., don't you pick up the phone and get on the line with Pelosi or Schiff? Say you call Adam Schiff and you say, Schiff, you dummy, you idiot, you freaking tool. What are you doing going around talking about Ukraine? Don't you know that my son and my family was making millions out of there. If you're Lindsey Graham, don't you do the same?
Yeah.
If you're Pelosi, even Pelosi and her family, I mean, don't you sit there and say, don't mention Ukraine. Stay on Russia. Fine. Stay on Russia. Putin bad. Russia bad. Okay, I got that. But the Ukraine thing, I mean, they all knew. I just still don't understand it because, in essence, they really have torpedoed the Biden campaign for good.
Yeah.
Hunter Biden is now being followed around by paparazzi in LA.
Yeah.
You know, he's under the microscope. That's the one part that I just don't get. Are they that Trump deranged that they would rather, you know, see Trump impeached and risk, you know, having their money laundering, theft cover blown in Ukraine? Is that how crazy they are?
Well, to answer your question, I think it is how crazy they are. I don't know whether Biden telephoned anybody, but I'm pretty sure that they're having
hypothetical.
A lot of,
I'm saying.
I don't know. What I'm going to say is that I think there have probably been lots of those telephone calls. I think all kinds of people have been calling, not just Schiff, but Pelosi also, and say, you know, this is absolute madness. Do you really want us to go down this route? I mean, you know, quite apart from anything else, we're all implicated in some form or other. I'm pretty sure that there are lots of people who have been saying that. But I think Trump derangement syndrome trumped it all, you know, pun deliberate, if you like. I also think, actually, you know, that there might even have been a calculation. And this is not far-fetched that enough Republican senators are themselves in some way implicated in all these problems, that, you know, they would actually get rid of Trump precisely because he was raising these issues about corruption in Ukraine, and that would get them all behind the impeachment. I mean, if that was the calculation, it was a disastrous calculation. It was completely and absurdly wrong. It completely misunderstood the dynamics and the politics of this thing. But as I said, it shows how completely out of touch people have become. I you know, can I just, you know, briefly make a parallel here with the Brexit situation in Britain? I mean, you remember there were all those intrigues going on. We spent hours analysing them on the Duran, all these intrigues with Speaker Burko in the House of Commons and all this wire pulling and all that. And of course, what it did in the end was it hardened support for Brexit. And what was so strange was that these people who were creating this parliamentary crisis didn't seem to understand that. And I think, I sense that we're getting something of the same here. They didn't really understand what they were doing. And I get the impression some of them are really upset and angry that it's worked out in the way that it has.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Pam Bondi outlines the whole damn thing.
Absolutely.
And now we all have it on video.
We have it on video, and more to the point, it's also now in the Senate record. I mean, it's all there. It's all been made official. So, I mean, you know, everybody, all they have to do in, you know, 50 years' time, if they want to research this thing, is go to the Library of Congress and look it all up there. It's all there in black and white. I mean, it's there for them to read. And, of course, that makes it far more likely that there is going to be an investigation now than there would have been, because this is where I think the really bizarre thing about all of this really comes down. When you actually read that transcript, and I've said this so many times, it bewilders me, it baffles me that people are still getting this so wrong. When you read this transcript, when you read the New York Times accounts of what Donald Trump supposedly said to Bolton, and we've only got, you know, these second, third accounts of this. When you look at what Ambassador Sondland's actual evidence was, it's not actually clear that Donald Trump was pressing Zelensky to investigate the Bidens. I mean, that's not what that report, that transcript, if you like, you know, that report of his conversation with Zelensky actually says. He says to Zelensky, you know, I'm really concerned about corruption in Ukraine, which is he's entitled to be. He's the president of the United States and he's sending aid to that country. And I'm really concerned about the role that some people in Ukraine may have had with Russiagate, which Barr and Durham are now investigating. And of course, he brings up in the context of these discussions the things that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden were doing. But I've never seen anywhere any evidence that he actually pushed the Ukrainians to investigate the Bidens. And the Ukrainians deny that he did. So, you know, all this has done now is it's made an investigation much more likely than would have been the case if they just left it alone. But, you know, there we are. I mean, you know, what did the Greeks say? You know, whom the gods destroy, they first make mad.
Yeah, and I mean, any politician talking about Ukraine is going to mention corruption. I mean, we all know. Everyone knows what's going on there.
Absolutely.
It's impossible to talk about Ukraine and the politics of Ukraine without mentioning corruption. Well, so when all these people, even on the left and the right, they sit there and say, oh, well, you know, Trump shouldn't be impeached, but, you know, his call was, you know, a little bit, you know, a little bit in poor taste or inappropriate.
Yeah.
No. You're talking about Ukraine, corruption. Corruption, Ukraine. Everyone knows what's going on. Everyone.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the improper thing, the wrong thing to do is to provide aid to Ukraine and not talk about corruption. That isn't just wrong. As I understand it, it's actually against the law. So, I mean, you know, it's people have got this one completely the wrong way round. This is my own view about this. I mean, I think anybody, as you rightly say, who understands Ukraine and the situation there can see it for themselves. As I said, this has always been a complete misconception about, you know, what happened and what Donald Trump was doing. Now, it's true that he does talk quite often in a kind of stream of consciousness way. It's not always easy to separate out all the various things that he says. But, you know, go back to what Zelensky and Trump talked about in that famous conversation. And it's actually, when you really read it carefully, very clear. He talks about Russiagate and the Ukrainian role in Russiagate. He talks about corruption. And when he talks about corruption, he says, you know, there's been all this trouble with Biden, father and son. And, you know, that rings alarm bells. But he doesn't actually say anywhere in that call, I'm not going to give you your aid unless you actually investigate these two people. That's not what he says.
No,
it's not directly, not indirectly. Yeah. I mean, he never says anything of the sort. He never mentions the aid.
The whole thing's ridiculous. And everyone that watches this video, if you're a citizen of the US, if you're a citizen of any EU country, then you know what? They should investigate what happened in Ukraine, because 40, 45, 50 billion of all our money, all of our money through the taxes we pay went missing in Ukraine via the US, via EU, and via the IMF.
Absolutely. We've discussed this.
Where did all that money go? Where did it all go?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Donald Trump should not be impeached for asking those questions, which is what essentially
I want to know.
What happened? Exactly. That's essentially the point that Bam Bondi was making in a somewhat different way. It's also the point that Dershowitz was making. Though Dershowitz actually went a lot further and basically said, you know, even if Donald Trump was asking those questions and expecting to gain political capital from it, he was asking the right questions, because, you know, that's in the national interest that he should do that. And you can't simply say that because the president is doing something in the national interest, the fact that he will derive personal benefit, political benefit from it, is somehow wrong. And the Democrats, having no response to Dershowitz on this, have gone around misrepresenting what he said by implying that what Dershowitz said is that the president is entitled to do whatever he thinks is in his own interests, because that is in the national interest, which is not what Dershowitz said, just to clarify.
Yeah. All right. Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of The Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button, hit that notifications bell, and hit that like button. And also look for us on iTunes and SoundCloud for an audio copy of this video, and please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Check out our magic mugs and our shirts at the Duran Shop, theduranshop.com. Alexander, you have a mug right there.
Indeed, I do. And I'm drinking tea from it, as I often do, even though it's actually getting quite late now. But as I said, I drink tea all through the day and most of the night as I slave away researching stories, which we make videos out of. Alex, by the way, does the same. Really, I think coffee's more Alex's drink than tea, but, you know, I've never discussed it with him. So we have our amazing magic mugs. This one is our original own magic mug. It's the one I've had longest. And you can see on it there the actual double-headed eagle of the Duran, which hovers over the world with its two heads pointing to the east and the west, keeping track of everything. And as I've said many times, it's light, it's strong, it's incredibly easy to hold. It doesn't crack or break or discolor. I've had this mug for over a year. I use it all the time, and you see what perfect condition it's in. So we have our magic mugs. We also have a big range of them, by the way, with lots of other badges and coats of arms, which you can find. And we're always thinking of expanding that range too. And we have also of equally high quality, our Duran merchandise, our other merchandise, our shirts like the Duran polo shirt I'm wearing now, which is incredibly smart and very comfortable and 100% cotton. And we also have long sleeve shirts and short sleeved t-shirts and v-neck shirts. And we've got hoodies and hats and stickers. And you can also find ebooks in our shop. You can find all these great things. And you support the Duran by buying them because, as Alex correctly said, we rely on our viewers and their support through, you know, the shop and other things to keep us going in these hard times. You know, we have hard times with YouTube, we have hard times with all sorts of people. And at the same time, you will own these great things if you support us in that way. We made a decision that we would get very high quality merchandise to our viewers, because that's our way of showing respect to them. So come to our shop, buy these great things, help the Duran, help yourself. Alex will tell you how.
You'll find a link to our shop in the description box down below, theduranshop.com. Alexander Mercurs, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.